is.
All right. Oh. Gonna jump right in. So there we're gonna go back and read a gory story. Okay. Perek Yud Aleph is where we were up to. I think last week, if I remember correctly, we kind of jumped around a little bit. We looked at some kind of bird's eye view, some of the various campaigns of Shaul and the stories that will take place, just to kind of sense where Shaul is coming from and what's driving his leadership. And we saw a certain tendency towards to look at engaging the tribes of in the campaigns, bringing the army together, but with a balance or a shift to the people that is a little bit more conciliatory than the Navi would have been comfortable with. And so we end up with these stories related to the people taking spoils of war when they weren't supposed to, the people taking violating cherims when they're not supposed to, etc. And so, yeah, that seems to be one of the weak links of Shaul HaMelech. What I want to do is for today is to go back to the story of Yavesh Gilad, and I promise you that we would explore in a little more detail that very famous and somewhat hard to stomach story of Pilagesh Begiva. So that's what we have on our agenda for this morning.
Sorry, do we have a handout or no?
We will. Okay. So I'll give it to you. It's not really much of most of which we're just going to sort of go through as we go through it. All right. So let's just go back to Perek Yud Aleph for a moment. I want to sort of focus on one part of the story. Shaul comes back from the field, and there's his encounter between Shaul and the messengers from Yavesh Gilad. And when Shaul hears the story, he's very moved, he's very angry, he's very disturbed by the lack of response of Bnei Israel. And so the Pasuk says in Pasuk Zion 7, Vayikach tzemet bakar, vayinatcheu, vayishalach v'cho gvu Yisrael b'yad ha-malachim lemor, asher enenu yotze achrei Shaul v'achar Shmuel, ko ye'ase livkaro. He took this pair of ox, cut it up into pieces, sent it through all of the territory of Israel, through the messengers, biyad ha-malachim. What does it mean, biyad ha-malachim? Which messengers are we talking about? Which messengers does he send these pieces of ox with? Who are the malachim, the messengers that he uses to send these pieces of bakar?
The soldiers?
No. Who are the malachim in the story?
Is it the messengers who came?
From?
Well, it says they arrived at. Where did they come from?
Right. Who are these messages from?
From the tribes within the...
Nope. No. Let's go back to go back a little bit earlier in the story. Pasuk Gimel Dalet 3-4. V'yamnu elav ziknei Yavesh Gilad. When Yavesh Gilad were talking to Nachash, king of Ammon, Heref lanu shivat yamim, give us 7 days, open parentheses, v'nishlacham malachim b'chol gvu Yisrael. We will send messengers to all of the territory of Israel. V'im'en moshia otanu v'yatzanu lefanach elecha. If nobody comes to save us, then we will come and surrender to you. That was that verse that we parsed into two parts. Right? V'nishlacham malachim b'chol gvu Yisrael. We will send malachim, messengers, to all of the borders of Israel. In Pasuk Dalet, V'yavoh ha-malachim kivat Shaul v'yidabru ha-dvarim bozneam. These messengers who came from where? Kivat No, who came to Givat Sheol? They came from Yavesh Gilad, correct? They are the ones who are coming to tell Bnei Yisrael what's going on in Yavesh Gilad and ask for their help, in the response being that everybody is crying. Sheol comes from the field, hears the story, takes tzemed bakar, cuts it up, back to Pasuk Zion, vayishalach b'chol gavu Yisrael, b'yad ha-malachim. So which malachim are we talking about? Correct. It's the malachim from Yavesh Gilad. This is important to note, that he sends the malachim from Yavesh Gilad had a mission. Their mission was to go and gather response, Moshiach, from all of the territory of Israel. They come to Givat Shaul first. Shaul takes this Tzemed Bakar, changes the message that he gives to the malachim, gives it back to the malachim, and says, okay, now your message is now going to be a little different. Instead of coming to each city in Israel and saying, oh, Yavesh Gilad is sitting out there in the borders of Gilad, bound borders with Ammon. Ammon is attacking, and if we don't do something about it, they're going to conquer us and maim us and brand us. Instead of telling a sob story, the message you're going to tell them is the following. It's a call to arms. You're going to call them to arms. You're going to tell them, here's the message. You see this piece of ox? If you don't come now, this is what's going to have to follow Shaul and Shmuel. This is what's going to happen to your flock. Which is, as we've said, a euphemism for a threat.
Yeah, it's not exactly a call to arms. It's
right.
A threat.
Basically, it's a threat. Well, that's how you. That's what a call to arms is. Right? Basically, if you get drafted, every draft notice is a threat. If you don't come,
you're going to be arrested.
Right? You'll be arrested. So. Or your money confiscated, or your land confiscated in this case. Right? So this is a general call-up, and you don't have an option. The response being, Vayipol pachad Hashem al ha'am, vayetzu ki'ish echad. So the people, the fear of God fell upon them, which is an ironic play on phrases, because that's exactly what Shaul did. He, as he said, put the fear of God in them. I think they're more afraid of Shaul than they were of God, but that's also euphemistic. Vayetzu ki ish echad. They came out like one person. What does vayetzu ki ish echad mean?
They were united.
United. Unity. Unity of purpose. They came out. This is a call to arms. And they came ki ish echad. The census, military census was taken, 300,000 soldiers from Israel, 30,000 from Yehuda, grant total military force of 330,000. All the tribes together are a significant fighting force. Each tribe by itself may not necessarily be significant, or each city by itself, but when you finally unite the tribes together and you bring all the soldiers, you get an army in the magnitude of 350,000 people. So, of course, the battle with Yavesh Gilad doesn't take long. Once they come and attack Yavesh Gilad, Yavesh Gilad is attacking a single city. They sent, what did they send? They sent a garrison. They sent enough people, soldiers, to take out a city without realizing that they were now going to be attacked by an entire army of a nation strong, 350,000. And one of the big questions in this story is what transformation comes over Shaul? What triggers this very different personality in Shaul? What is it about the personality that changes? How do we know that there's a transformation taking place?
Because he's not hiding anymore.
Right, he's not hiding. This is a shepherd turned warrior. This is a shepherd who is not looking for lost donkeys anymore. Right, he is raising an army of probably one of the largest armies in the region. He does so in a very short period of time. Right, this call-up takes with no more than 7 days. How do I know it takes no more than 7 days?
because that's when they told him they'd give him an answer?
Right, because they have until 7 days to give an answer to Nachash. So if the response is on the seventh day, then this call-up from all of the borders of Israel, 330,000 soldiers, takes no more than 7 days. This is a remarkable process.
Not only that, he's got a military strategy.
And he has a military strategy. He knows exactly what he's going to do. He divides them into three heads, and he attacks on three sides. And this battle takes a couple of hours, and it's done. So this is one of the big questions when you read the first parts of the story of Shaul, is what did God see in him that would, you know, here's this meek, humble, tall, but height being irrelevant to the fact that he's doesn't want the position, then he shies away from the position, then he's hiding from the position. And you have to ask yourself, what is it that God saw in Shaul to allow, to make him the king appointed? And the answer clearly lies in this moment. When you see the way in which he's capable of responding, you understand why Shaul is described in the very first time we meet him. And the very first time we are introduced to Shaul, back in the beginning of Perek Tet, the pasuk says, "Vayhi ish mi ben Yamin, ushmo Kish ben Aviel ben Tzur ben Bochorat ben Afiach ben ish imini, gibor chayil." Kish, Shaul's father, is described as all Yichus, gibor chayil, strong warrior. Velo haya ben ushmo Shaul bachur vatov. And he had a son, Shaul, tall, good. The rest of the story. But the fact that Kish is described as Gibor Chayil would tend to assume that this was a family that was not strangers to military strength. We don't see that in Shaul until now. And suddenly we understand why Shaul is Shaul ben Kish, Gibor Chayil. The question becomes, what's triggered Shaul? What's set him off? Vayichar apo me'od, he was angry at the response of the people of Givat Shaul. He was responded by the lax, by the unwillingness of the people to respond or to react. The tears that they shed, maybe. Right? But the whole response was certainly lacking in a proper, appropriate, proportionate response to the depth of the tragedy. What set him off? So, one thing we have already noticed, yeah?
Does it have something to do with that ruach, the spirit of...
Right. Vatitzlach ruach alakim o Shaul. Certainly, I think that there's an element of that this is his moment. Ruach HaLukim comes and rests upon him. This is his moment. I think that that's certainly true. The question you have to ask yourself is, does that come in a vacuum? Could you take any ordinary shepherd and say of him, Vatitzlach alav Ruach HaLukim, and suddenly transform him into a master warrior? I'm not sure. I don't think so. And I don't think that that's what worked in Sefer Shoftim either. The phrase is very familiar to us in Sefer Shoftim, but it applied specifically to people like Yiftach, Shimshon, Gidon. These were individuals who were very strong, very engaged. Yiftach was certainly a Gibor Chayil. He's described as a Gibor Chayil from the word go. And then, in the midst of the story, it says, Vatitzlach alav Ruach HaLukim. Vatitzlach alav Ruach HaLukim is usually reserved for the last moment, for the moment of the courage that's necessary to do what needs to be done. But you have to have the raw material in you to be able to do that. Can't take a... It wouldn't work for me. Okay? All day long, but I could never, you know, it would never work. So it needs to have a certain personality, a certain disposition to be able to do the things that are described. And so, come back to the question, what triggers Shaul? What sets him off? And I think that the answer is somewhat evident, is self-evident, but the answer really needs to be explored and understood. I think what sets him off is the identification of Yavesh Gilad. A lot of surprised looks around the table. Okay, the fact that these people came from Yavesh Gilad. Okay. So that means we have to go back to a story which we may not have remembered so much.
So
we kind of
we
blot it out of our memory a little bit, kind of block it out because it's such a very hard story to swallow. But nonetheless, we need to remind ourselves of some of the salient and important pieces of the story of Pilagesh Begiva. Right. We're going to leave this section very quickly and move to Yavesh Gilad. Actually, before we do that, I just want to do a quick review of the rest of the story because there's certain phrases we're going to have to come back to. After the battle, we read Pasuk Zion, Pasuk Tchet, Pasuk Tet, there's the battle with Yavesh Gilad, with the Nachash, king of Ammon. The battle is over by midday. Pasuk Yud, Vayomru Anshei Yavesh, Machar Netzei Alechem. By tomorrow, the people of Yavesh said to Ammon, Nachash, king of Ammon, tomorrow we will go out to you. Vasitem lanu gecholatot b'enechem. Do what you want to us. Meaning, that's the
surrender.
Empty thread.
They're not surrendering.
Well,
or they are.
What's the conversation between? Let's read this pesukim in order. Let's go back. Vayifkadem bepasukhet. Vayifkadem bevazek. Vayu bnei Yisrael shlosh mil telef ish yudah shloshim alef. 330,000. Pasuk tet. Vayamru la malachim habaim. And they send. Then they told the malachim these messages from Yavesh Gilad. Kod tomru le'ish Yavesh Gilad. Go back to Yavesh Gilad and say to them, Machar tiye lachem tshu'a kuchom ha-shamash. Remember that word tshu'a? We've had it a few times. Tomorrow you will have your victory by noon. Kuchom ha-shamash. Vayavo ha-malachim yagidu l'anshi Yavesh v'yismachu. They come back to the people of Yavesh Gilad and they are rejoicing. V'yamru anshi Yavesh. So then the people of Yavesh said to whom? To Nachash. Machar netzei aleichem v'asitem lanu kecholatov be'enichem. Tomorrow we come out to you, do to us whatever is good in your eyes. Meaning?
We surrender.
Meaning tomorrow you'll have your wish. You wanted to take out our eye, to subvert us, to subjugate us, to enslave us, to brand us, to make us slaves of yours. Tomorrow we'll come to you.
Is there some irony saying good in your eyes?
There could be. Although the phrase "kecholatov be'enechem" is a phrase that's not "metzatichem be'enecha." It's a phrase that appears many times in Tanakh. But sure,
why not?
Absolutely. Vahim yimocharat v'yasem shulut am shloshet rashim v'yavo b'tocha machane b'ashmorat aboker v'yakut amon adchom ayom v'yu anisharim v'yafutzu v'lo nisharu v'mshnayim yachad. By the next day, the attack starts. Three different heads, three different parts of the army. And Nachash is surrounded, Nachash doesn't know what hit him, and the time between dawn and noon, the entire army of Nachash has disbanded. Didn't take much, I don't think they fired many shots. They just ran. And this battle didn't take long. There weren't, lo nisharu b'mshnayim yachad, no two stood together.
It was psychological warfare, because they really thought that they didn't have a battle.
Right. There was no battle. Tomorrow they're going to come out and surrender. And suddenly they're surrounded on three sides by 110,000 soldiers on each side. Now, there's another irony here. V'loni sharubam shnayim yachad. No two stood together. Why is that ironic?
Because all of our army came together as one person.
Right, because the Israelite army came ki'ish echad. So the contrast between the unity of purpose of the army of Israel and the disunity, self-serving, just conquering territory for the sake of it, and when they meet opposition, they ran, of the picture of Ammon is significant. To which the people then said, "Vayomer ha'am el Shmuel, Mi ha'omer shehu yimloch aleinu tnu ha'anashim unimitem. Remember those people who said, those B'nai B'liya'al, who yesterday said, Ma Yoshienu Zeh, B'nai B'liya'al Amru Ma Yoshienu Zeh, right? Those people who said of Shaul, they've disparagingly made fun of him when he was hiding, what will this do to save us? Give them to us that we may kill them. Why do they want to kill them?
Because they're traitors.
Traitors, treason. To which Shaul intervenes and says, Vayomer Shaul, remember, the response, the question was put to Shmuel, the Navi. The response comes from the only one who has the authority to respond, which is Shaul. Vayomer Shaul, lo yumat ish bayom hazeh. No man is going to die today. Ki yom asa Hashem tshua b'Yisrael. This was a day of Yeshua. This is not a day to kill people. To which Shmuel then says, okay, let's go back to Gilgal and renew the malchus there in the Chadesh Sham HaMelucha. Okay, Yavesh Gilad. There's no way to read the story of Yavesh Gilad without understanding that Yavesh Gilad is a postscript story. This story is a postscript part two. And there's truly, nearly no way to understand the depth of the story without understanding part one. And part one is the end of Sefer Shoftim. So today we are, time remaining, maybe next year too. We'll see.
Are we meeting
next week? No. 2 weeks is a question mark. See how far we get today. We turn to Perek Yud Tet. Shoftim Perek Yud Tet. Now, this is a long story. There's three chapters to the story. And we actually studied it in depth when we went through the end of Sefer Shoftim. So, my intention for today is to kind of bird's eye view it. Pieces of the story.
Okay.
And if there are pieces that we're missing, I'll fill in the story as we go. And if I'm missing something, you'll let me know. The beginning of the story starts with a kind of setup to the background about this Levi from Har Ephraim, who has a Pilegesh from Beit Lechem Yehuda. She leaves him, she goes back to her father's house, he runs after her. There's a whole episode there in the relationship between the Levi and his Pilegesh, which describes a kind of very belittling, disparaging relationship and attitude, driven in part because she's his Pilegesh, and in part, I suspect, because she's from a different tribe. We talked about the relationship between tribes at that time. Be that as it may, that part of the story I'm going to skip. They are returning home, which is where the story gets, we pick up. So Perek Yud Tet.
Didn't we spend a lot of time about Vayehi, Vayamim, Ahim, Melech, Im, B'Yisrael?
Yes. We spent a lot of time with it. We're going to have to come back to that, but
yeah.
This really needs to be the beginning of next year's introduction to part two of the story, but we'll review it. But yes, there's a Vayamim, Ahim, Im, Melech, B'Yisrael is a major theme of the Sefer. They come to the city of Yevus. The city of Yevus is Yerushalayim, is a Canaanite city at that time. They decide to pass it, they don't want to stay there, and they go to Geva Binyamin. And there they find, in Pasuk Tet Vav, Vayeshev Berachov Ha'ir, Ve'en Ish Masefotam Abaita Lalun. This Levi from Har Ephraim is now visiting the city of Givav Binyamin, and nobody is prepared to give them lodging. Again, speaks more to the relationship between the tribes than anything else. Pasuk Tzayin, v'hinei ish zaken ba min maaseh min asadeh ba'erev v'ish mehar Ephraim v'ugar ba'giva. Who's the only person who's prepared to give this poor Levi from Har Ephraim even the time of day? This old man who happens to be in Givah, who, as it turns out, is really not from Givah. He's from Ephraim, which means that he's a landsman to this Levi who lives in Har Ephraim, and therefore, Be'anshei HaMakom B'nei Yemini, the local inhabitants were from
Benjamin.
Pasuk Yud Zayin, Ve'yisai Na Ve'yara Ish Ov Ha'Oveach B'chov Ha'ir, Ve'yomar Ha'ish Ha'zaken, Ana Telech Me'ayin Tavo, where are you coming from, where are you going? He tells him, I was coming from Betlechem Yehuda, I'm going to Har Ephraim, I'm from Har Ephraim. So the man says, and then he complains, he says, nobody's taking me into their house, and I have food, all I need is a place to sleep. So the Ish HaZaken says, don't worry, I'll take you in, your food is on me, your lodging's on me, and he brings him to his house. Of course, the rest of the story is that the local inhabitants are not happy that this Zaken took this stranger into this house. This behavior of Binyamin is very reminiscent of and probably the source for many of the stories that we have about Sodom, because the behavior here is very, very reminiscent of what we have as our image of the people of Sodom, and certainly we see it in the context of the story of Lot. We had a lot of discussion about the comparison between this story and the story of Lot taking in the malachim, the strangers, in his house, for the messengers from Abraham, in the context of Sodom, and the people of Sodom who came and surrounded the house and said, give us the strangers. Right? The stories are very similar, and even the reference to the attempt to Pasuk Chavet, V'yimuch el ha'ish ba'al ha'bayit ha'zaken l'mor ha'tzeyat ha'ish ha'shabal b'techa v'nedainu, give us the man who came to your house that we may know him, which is also somewhat of a problematic phrase. No, the man says, no, don't do it, don't do this terrible thing. Pasuk Chav Dalet. This is where our story picks up. Hine vitia betula ufilag sheu. Otsia na otam v'anu otam. V'asu lahem atov be'enechem. So what did the people of Sodom say? What did the Ish HaZaken say? He said, here is my betula and my daughter and his pilagesh. We will take them out to you. Otsiana otam. V'anu otam. Have your way with them. V'yasu lahem atov be'enechem.
So sick.
Okay. It is, but listen to the phraseology. What was the response of Anshei Yavesh to Nachash Amoni?
Listen.
Machar nitze alechem va'ase lanu kechol hatov be'enechem. Remember that phrase?
Mm-hmm.
Right, there's a certain irony in the parallel between the two phrases. Amon is from Lot. It's from Sodom. Yeah, there could be an analogy there. V'lo avu anashim lishmo lo, ma'yichazek ha'ish b'filagsho. Pasuk of Hey, the man took his pilagesh and threw her out to them. Ba'yotzeot alehem chutz. They had her and oppressed her and raped her all night long. Ba'yit alaluva kol alayla daboker. She comes back to the house. She falls on the door. She's got her hand on the door. She literally collapsed to the door. The master, this Levi from Har Ephraim, he got up in the morning to leave, ostensibly assuming that the Pilagesh is gone. Vayiftach daltot habayit ve'etze lelechet l'darko v'ine ha'isha pilagesho nafela petach habayit v'yadeh al asaf. He opens the door and there's his pilagesh with her hand still on the door frame, on the door. Vayomer aleha, he said to her, kumi v'nelcha, let's get up and let's go. Ve'en one.
He's a piece of work, that guy.
Ve'en one.
What'd you say?
He's a piece
of
work.
He's a work.
Yeah. I mean, it's described that way, clearly. Ve'en one. There's no answer. Now, there's a word missing here.
Because she was dead.
It doesn't say that.
Ve'en one la.
It just says ve'en one. There's no answer. Do we know if she is dead or not? No. All we know is that there is no answer. He put her on the donkey. Comes to his house. He took the knife. Took the pilagesh. And he cut her into 12 pieces. And he sent a piece to each of the tribes of Israel. Ostensibly to do what?
Mobilize them.
To mobilize them to come to fight against the people of Binyamin for this terrible crime.
Who arrested him?
Anybody who saw this, can you imagine this package that came in the mail? This is unprecedented. This is unacceptable. This cannot go without a response. Let's move, mobilize.
But he now caused it in the first place.
Excuse me?
Caused it in
the evil of this guy is beyond measure. Unbelievable evil that he perpetrated. Part of the story is to emphasize his evil, which only gets worse in the story, but part of it is also to emphasize Binyamin. And there's very few good guys in the story. Okay? That's part of the reason why the story begins with the phrase and ends with the phrase, "Bayimim mahem ein melech b'Yisrael ish kol yeshar b'nav yaseh." Right? There's no king. There's anarchy. There's total disunity. There's total disharmony. They're all killing each other. Okay, this is a horrible, horrible story. But it's important for us to know, and the phraseology here is critical, because this practice, this instance where he takes the pilegesh and he cuts her up, is a phrase that appears only twice in all of Tanakh. Once in Pilagesh Bekiva, and the other, Shaul, who takes the bakar, and he cuts it up into its parts, and I put the two phrases side by side on the page for you. Okay? Take a look at the first.
Have that one. On this one?
Yeah, same thing. Yeah. Anybody have a copy?
Those are notes. Oh,
okay. You don't have, yeah, my notes you don't have, but you have the page. Okay. I put them side by side on the page. On the right hand side is Shaul. And on the left hand side is the story of the Pilagesh. The phraseology is exactly the same. So when we read the story in Sefer Shmuel, Perigot Aleph, we read this phrase, it should grate on our nerves like nails on a chalkboard. Because it's a story, it's a phrase that we've heard before, but only in a most horrific context. And that Shaul could do this thing to these Tzemed Bakar, it cannot be an accident.
Is he trying to do a reparation?
We'll see what he's trying to do, but I think he's certainly trying to remind everybody of an old story, of an old stain.
Now, know about that story?
Would have to be. Would well, have to
the
be.
Pieces went to everyone.
Okay,
so
it's not only the pieces of the story. Remember, it's Yavesh Gilad we haven't gotten to yet.
No, but I mean the pieces of the
Right, of the Pelagish. I mean, this is one of the darkest stains in the history of the period of Shoftim, and we're only... There's a whole machloket when this story took place, whether it's earlier or late in the story, in the context of Sefer Shoftim. According to one school of thought, it's in its proper time here at the end of Sefer Shoftim, which means that it's 100 years before Shaul, which is not an old story. Even if it's earlier year, and it's 200 or 300 years before Shaul, but it also accounts for the reason for why Shaul describes himself as from Binyamin, as one of the smallest tribes of Israel. Because remember, the end of the story is they destroy all of Shevet Binyamin. They have to rehabilitate, they have to rebuild Shevet Binyamin from 400 people. So Binyamin as a Shevet lives with the stigma forever. The aftermath of Pelagish Begiva. Yirmiyahu HaNavi, 400 years later, Yirmiyahu HaNavi will make reference to the story of Pelagish Begiva as a kind of symbol of the story of Shevet Binyamin. So I don't think anybody ever forgot this story.
It was one of the stories that was passed down? Because after 100 years, they weren't alive still, if it was the 100 years.
Yeah, but the events of history, the major events of history don't get forgotten. Right, Sefer Shmuel ultimately was Sefer Shoftim itself was written by Shmuel HaNavi. Vayetzu kol bnei Yisrael v'tikahel ha'eda ke'ish echad. All of Israel gathered together in response ke'ish echad. L'midan b'yad b'resheva v'eretz ha'gilad al Hashem ha'mitzpah. They all come to God in Mitzpah. That's also interesting. Where was the first coronation ceremony of, or the anointment ceremony of Shaul?
Mitzpah.
Correct. Vayit yatzvu pinot kol ha'am kol shiftei Yisrael b'kahal am Elokim 400,000 ish ragli shalif charef. No, how many?
400,000.
So Shaul gathered 330,000 through the Tzemet Bakar that he cut up, and they all came Ki'ish Echad, and the tribes of Israel arrived on the scene here, 400,000, in response to the parts of the Pelegesh, also Ki'ish Echad. Vayishmu b'nei Binyamin ki yalu b'nei Yisrael ha'mitzpah, Binyamin is listening to this. Binyamin is standing there on the side. They're watching the tribes of Israel gathering together in Mitzpah, an army of 400,000. And then they start to investigate what happened. So the Levi, I mentioned this the first time, pay attention to the way he's described. So suddenly he's Ish HaIsha, not Adoneha, not her master. She's not his Pelegesh. It's Ish HaIsha, the husband. So he changes the dynamic of the relationship. Vayamar HaGivata Shele Binyamin Bati Ani Ufilek Shilalun. I and my Pelegesh came to the Givat to sleep. Vayakumu Alay Balei HaGivah Vayasubu Alay Adabayit Alayla. I was surrounded by the local inhabitants of Givat. Oti Dimula Rog. They threatened to kill me. They took my Pelagesh. They raped her and they killed her. Which is not exactly what happened. There's a lot of pieces of the story that he omitted, including the fact that it never said that she died.
It's possible he cut her up.
We don't know. We don't know. It never says she died. V'achez b'filegesh v'natcheh v'ashacheh v'chosh sedeh v'nachalat Yisrael k'esu zima u'nevala b'Yisrael. Look at the terrible things that they have done, and therefore I called everybody to arms in this audacious way. Hinei kucham b'nei Yisrael havu lechem davar v'eitza halom Vayakom kol ha'am ke'ish echad le'mor. Pasuk chet. Again, they respond like one man in unison. Lo nelech ish lo halo, v'lo nasur ish leveito. Nobody's going home. This is something which has to be addressed. Ze ha'davar asher na'aseh le'givah, aleha b'goral. We will attack Givah by the goral. What is a goral? Lot is essentially a reflection of the mechanism by which they would go to war. How would they go to war? Somebody has to lead them into the battle. The battle is usually led by one of the tribes. How do they determine which tribe would lead them into battle? By the Urim V'Tumim, or as it's called here, the Gura.
Oh, it's really the Urim
V'Tumim. Lakachnu asaran nashim lemaya v'chol shiftei Yisrael. They describe the division of roles in the army. They'll take me'al le'elef, elef le'levavah, lakachat tzedah la'am. A portion will fight, a portion will carry the food. And we will go and attack Geva of Binyamin for this nevelah that they have done.
So they were just that one city they were attacking?
For now. Vayasef kol ish Yisrael el ha'ir ke'ish echad chaverim.
Again.
For the third time we are told that they attacked, they came to the city of Geva as in unity, ke'ish echad chaverim. That phrase, actually I want to give a drasha about that phrase. Because the phrase, ke'ish echad chaverim, is a unique phrase. Again, these are phrases that appear only here. But it appears in only one other place in a slightly different format, but not in Tanakh, but rather in our Tfilot. The only time this phrase is paraphrased, in the Birkat Rosh Chodesh, in the Rosh Chodesh benching, when we say, chaverim ko Yisrael. Ke'ish echad chaverim. Just a phrase that kind of has to ring in our ears a little bit. Okay?
Whatever thing of it is negative.
Well, it's in the context of Birkat HaChodesh, it's not meant to be negative. In its original form, source, it was, and I suspect that was intentional to kind of reverse it, right? The unity can be negative if it's used for the wrong purpose.
Right.
So they send messengers to Shiftei Binyamin, saying, what is this terrible thing? Now listen to Pasuk Yud Gimel carefully. Yata Tnu et ha'anashim b'nei b'li ya'al asher b'giva unimitem univara ha'ra'a az Yisrael. Give us these worthless people of Giv'ah that we may kill them and remove this scourge from Israel. V'lo avu b'nei b'nyamin lishma b'kol ha'chem b'nei Yisrael, and b'nei b'nyamin refused to give them up. Why is that phrase interesting?
B'nei
B'liyal. Right. So B'nei B'liyal is a phrase that comes up a few times, but we've had it in our story too. The whole phrase there is interesting. Tnu anashim B'nei B'liyal asher b'giva unimitem univara ra'am Yisrael v'lo avu b'nei Binyamin lishma b'kol achem.
Stood for everybody. Must have meant the whole city.
So they wanted the people of Giva who perpetrated this crime. They probably wanted the whole city, or at least the main main perpetrators. Binyamin was going to protect them, which is part of the problem. But the phraseology, Tnu ha'anashim unimitem. Tnu ha'anashim b'nei b'liyal unimitem. It's a phrase we just had. Why? Because remember in the aftermath of Shaul's great battle against Yavesh Gilad, what did the people say? Right. The people responded, that's the last line of this chart, the people responded to Shmuel saying, who are the people who said, Tnuha Nashim, right, me, Shaul Shim Lachaleinu, who, by the way, back in Perek Yud were described as B'nei B'liya'al. B'nei B'liya'al Omru Ma Yoshienu Zeh. Says the people to Shaul, Mi Anashim, to Shmuel, Mi Anashim, Mi Omer Shu'im Lachalin, Tnu Ha'anashim Unimitem. And of course Shmuel intervenes and says, no.
Shaul intervenes
and says, no. But the phraseologies of the whole two stories reads, as you go through it, there are phrases, key phrases, I constantly pick up on the story of Pilagish Begiv. Back to our story. B'nei Binyamin gathered together in their cities. Let's set the Melchaman B'nei Israel to go to war against B'nei Israel. התפקדו בני בנימין ביום ההוא מערים 26,000 איש של חרב. בני בנימין had 26,000 soldiers. לבד מיושבי הגבעה התפקדו 700 איש בחור, and another 700 from the גבעה. מכל העם הזה 700 איש בחור ייתן יד ימינו, and 700 left-handed people. כל זה קולע באבן על הסערה ולא יחתי. 700 sharpshooters who could hit a hare with a stone and not miss. In other words, why are any of that relevant?
To show how few warriors they had.
They had few warriors compared to the size of Israel's army, but why is all of these details, how many, and the 700 from Bachur, and Ish Bachur, and the 700 sharpshooters who left-handed, why are all this military talk?
Could it be because Benjamin didn't go get them to get help?
This is Benjamin. This is a description of the army of Benjamin.
Oh, this is Benjamin.
This is the army of Benjamin. From Binyamin, they gathered together 26,000 plus 700 Ishbachor from Givah, plus 700 left-handed sharpshooters. Special forces. What am I describing? Why is that relevant?
Sounds like they were willing to fight. They were
willing to fight, no question. More than willing to fight,
they were kind of into it.
They were quite capable. This was not a military force that you could just dismiss, even though it's only 26,000. It's 26,000 plus 700 Ishbachor from the Givah, plus 700 sharpshooters, left-handed. I mean, this is...
That's why they brought 400,000 from the other.
So they had 400,000, but nonetheless, 400,000 can't go fight at once, so you have to send waves, right? Campaigns, 40,000 here, 50,000 there, you send them in waves. But you're fighting against 26,000 soldiers who are fighting for their lives and who are quite capable warriors. Which means that you're not so fast running into this battle. If you are the tribes of Israel, by the way, have no sense of unity, there's no leader here. Who's the Shofet? Who's leading the tribes of Israel into battle? Who's the Shofet?
Yehuda's leading, but I don't know who the
Shofet is. Yehuda will eventually lead by tribe because after the Askur and Vitumim, but what leader, what Shofet, what leader is leading the campaign?
They don't have one.
I mean, they go to Ailey, don't they?
No, well, Eli's not here in this story. They go to Pinchas, but Pinchas is the Kohen. Pinchas is not leading him into battle, at least not yet.
Okay.
This is an army. Ve'ish Yisrael itpakdu levad mebinyamin arbam yot ishalev shcharev kol ze ish melchama. There are 400,000 on the other side of the camp of Israel. So they can't just go fight. They first have to go ask Urim V'Tumim. So they go to Bet-El. Vayishalu be'Elokim. Notice the paragraph break in there for a moment. I want to come back to it. But notice between Pasuk Tet Zayin and Pasuk Yud Zayin, describing the force of Binyamin and the force of Yehuda, there's a paragraph break in the middle of the story. Pasuk Yud Chet. They ask God, they ask Urim V'Tumim, who will lead us first into battle against Binyamin? Vayomer Hashem, Yehuda will lead first. So the morning the battle starts, Yehuda on the one side, Binyamin on the other. Bnei Binyamin came out of Giva and they fought. Vayashchitu b'Yisrael b'yamohu shnayim ve'eslim alef ish arza, and they fought. And the end result of that battle was 22,000 Israelites died. Who won the campaign?
Binyamin.
Okay, so they go back another day. They go back to the Mishkan. They cry. They ask a God again, should I go against Binyamin and my brother? And God said, go. The God the second day. ויצא בנימין לקראתם מן הגבעה ביום השני, on the second day, וישחיתו בבני ישראל עוד 18,000 איש, another 18,000 Israelites died on the second day, and by the time the story is over, after day one and day two, 40,000 Israelites have died, and of Binyamin, we don't know of a single death. And when you talk about a righteous war that was fought for the sake of morality and lo yasekem b'Yisrael, they can't do this. How do you dare tolerate such a terrible thing? And here they fight against Binyamin, a retribution for the protection of these evil people of the Givah, and 40,000 people die. So the third day they come back to the Beit El, they bring sacrifices, and they cry, and they said, they bring the Aaron, they bring Pinchas, and they said, should I go again to war against Binyamin on the third day? And God says, yes, on the third day go to war, because this day I will give them into your hands. Okay? Third day they go to war against Binyamin, they apply a little bit of tactics, they draw Binyamin out of the city, and they, Binyamin, a little bit of a false sense of confidence, and they end up falling in battle. The end result is that all that's left are 400 men, 600 men. Pasuk Mem Zayin, Vayifnu Vayenusu Hamidbar El Sela Rimon 600 Ish, Vayishu B'Sela Rimon 4 Chodashim. ואיש ישראל שבו בני בנימין ויקום לפי חרב מעיר מתו מעד ומעד כל הנמצא, גם כל הערים הנמצאות שלחו באש. בנימין is totally obliterated, man, woman, and child. Nobody left except for the 600 hiding in Selavimo. So the time the story is over, 40,000 Israelites died, 22,000, 20, whatever it is, 26,000 Binyaminites, minus the 400 who are, 600 who are hiding, plus all the women and children, probably equal numbers on both sides, at least.
Why did they kill the women and children?
No rationality. This is bloody civil war. They're not stopping to wonder about Geneva Conventions and rules of engagement. And then the real story begins. Because now they have to
now
they have to rebuild. Now the story's over. Now the heat of battle is over and the temperature is calmed down and people are a little more rational and they look back and they say, oh my God, what did we do? Right? So we get to Perek Chaf Aleph. And Perek Chaf Aleph is the key to the story. Because so far in this whole story, we have a horrific story about Pelegish Begiva and the civil war, but what's missing in the story?
What's going to happen to Benjamin?
What's going to happen to Benjamin? What's going to happen to the leader? But what's missing in terms of why are we learning this story when we're studying Sefer Shmuel, which is such a nice, beautiful story, and we've come back to such a gory story. And Melech B'Yisrael, true, but something else that's missing. I told you we're going to come back to the story for a reason.
I think the unity was, you know, what they were trying to get at.
When you're cutting up body parts of animals, right, there's got to be a connection.
So we
right? So what's missing in this so far that we haven't had here? Yevesh Gilad. This whole story started because of Yevesh Gilad. Yevesh Gilad's not in the story. Right, we have Binyamin, and we have Geva, we have the Levi, we have Har Ephraim, and we have Yavus. We have all kinds of cities. What we don't have is any reference to
Yavesh Gilad.
So it comes to Perek Chaf Aleph. V'ish Yisrael nishba b'mitzpah le'mor ish mimenu lo yiten bito le'binyamin le'isha. Israel, in the heat of battle, had taken an oath, saying, no one was allowed to give their daughter to Binyamin as a wife. But now they have a problem. What's the problem? They have an entire decimated tribe with only 600 men left. And they are sworn by their own oath not to allow their daughters to marry anybody from Binyamin, which means that if nobody can marry Binyamin, what will happen to the tribe?
They'll die out.
They come to Beit El, they come to the Mishkan, and they're crying with terrible tears. Why, God, has this happened to Israel? What's happened that's so terrible? 80,000 people have died, paid with their lives. What's happened that's so terrible? Liot lipaked ayom Israel shevet echad. That we are going to be one tribe less. In the numbers of Israel, there won't be anybody from Shevet Binyamin. Why? Because there's only 600 men, and there are no, and we are bound by our own oath, we can't marry them. They said, okay, wait a second. We have a solution to this problem. Is there anybody in the tribes of Israel who didn't come and fight this battle against Binyamin? Why is that a solution?
They weren't
part of the oath not to marry Binyamin if they weren't part of the battle. Now, on the other hand, Pasuk Hei says, Ki ha-shvua gdola ita la'asher lo ala la'ashem ha-mitzpah le'mor mot yumat. How did they get 400,000 people? It's a mystery. We haven't resolved the question how they got 400,000 call-ups. I know how Shaul got the 400,000 call-ups. How did they get 400,000 call-ups?
They sent out the...
So the answer is, it tells you right here, because there was a great oath taken. Another oath. What was the other oath? That anybody who didn't come and fight on behalf of God in Mitzpah would be put to death. Okay, so that's the other oath that they took. That if you don't come and fight for Binyamin, you're going to die. You fight against Binyamin. So, Vayinachamu b'nei Yisrael b'Binyamin achiv ve'yamru nigda yom shevet echad mi'Yisrael. The people are crying, oh, what a terrible calamity. An entire tribe of Israel is going to be wiped out. Ma na'aseh lehem l'notarim l'nashim. What are we going to do to find wives for the remainder? We swore that we would not give our daughters to them to marry. They said, wait a second, maybe there's a tribe that didn't come fight in this battle. Maybe somebody stood this one out. Maybe somebody remained neutral. And they took a census. Lo and behold, Yavesh Gilad was not included in the census. And nobody from Yavesh Gilad had come to fight against Binyamin. Yavesh Gilad is from Shevet Menashe, sitting on the east side of the Yarden, all the way over there. They're kind of in the middle of nowhere. They're neutral. They took a census. In fact, they found that there was nobody from Yavesh Gilad. So what did they do? So the entire city of Yavesh Gilad is now sitting on the other side of the Yarden. What did they do? So now remember, there are two oaths. Oath number one is?
Kill anybody who doesn't come.
Kill anyone who doesn't come from to fight the battle.
Right.
Oath number two was?
Not to give any of their daughters to marry Benjamin.
Right. So they found a group of people who had violated the oath not to fight against Benjamin. And they can be utilized to...
They have to kill them now. Because
but now they have to kill them. So first we're going to go kill them, and then we're going to go use them. That's exactly what happens. Vayishlechu sham ha'edah 12,000 ish mimnei achayil. So they send 12,000 soldiers, and they say to them, vayitzavu atam, and they tell them 12,000 soldiers means 1,000 from each tribe, and instruct them saying, lechu v'kitem et yishvei avesh gilad l'ficharev, go and wipe out the people of Yavesh Gilad, man, woman, and child. Destroy them, obliterate them. Any male and any woman of marriageable age who's married, just kill. And they found in Yavesh Gilad, after the battle and after they destroyed them and decimated them and killed out man, woman, and child, because they were so tearful about the fact that they destroyed the people of Binyamin. So then they found 400 women
who were just sitting around.
They brought them to Shiloh, and everybody lived happily ever after because they married the 400 survivors of Yavesh Gilad to the 600 survivors of, or 400 to 400, 200 remained bachelors. And this story has mystified Mepharshim for generations because it makes zero sense.
Except if we're barbarians.
Right? You're sitting in the Mishkan.
But how do they even
think
know
about the
who
logic?
The virgins are? Where are the 400 virgins?
That's a separate
why
issue.
All
that's
the
a,
when
that's
all
a separate issue. That's not hard to figure out. You take the married women and you kill them, and the unmarried women you spare. That's less of an issue to me than the fact that they're crying over the fact that they just had a civil war and destroyed one tribe, and their solution is to go and wipe out an entire city. That's a logical solution. That makes less sense than anything in the story. I understand the evil of the Pilagish, and I understand the evil of Givah, and I understand the evil of Binyamin to protect them, and I understand the evil of Bnei Yisrael to call up on a false pretense and go to war. I understand all of the motivations here. And we can work them through because they're all things that have happened before and they're all things that happened in history and they all make sense. They may not be good, but they all make sense. There's an internal logic to them. The one piece of it that doesn't make any sense is that they're sitting in the temple crying over the obliteration of Binyamin after the battle's over. And their response is to start another battle and to wipe out Yavesh Gilad? And on top of it, the bigger question in the story, which is even in some level an even more difficult part of the story to understand, is why when they ask the Urim V'Tumim twice whether they should go into battle, whether they should be led into battle, twice God led them into battle only to lose. And the third time to win and destroy Binyamin.
I don't think God was too happy with anybody at this point.
Right. But why?
They were also corrupt.
If Bnei Yisrael came together, ostensibly, for the purpose of the retribution against Binyamin, and they really were. I mean, the people of Givah were really quite morally horrific. I mean, the comparison to Sodom is not an accident.
But how do you know these guys were any better? The other guy, the Levi guy, who cut up his wife. I mean,
correct. But if the Bnei, correct. Of course. But if the Bnei Yisrael had come together, ostensibly on the pretense of righting this terrible calamity, and Binyamin were protecting them, so either say to them, don't go into battle at all, go home, or send them into battle and let them win. Either it's justified or it's not justified. On what basis do you send them into battle to lose twice, 40,000 people? So that's the other big piece of the story that the Mepharshim struck with. And they come up with answers which are really interesting textually, but unsatisfying. Like the first time they asked Urim V'Tumim, the question was posed the wrong way. They didn't ask, should they or shouldn't they? They asked, who should lead us? And the answer was, well, if you're gonna, Yehuda will lead you, right? Not to say that you should or shouldn't go, but if you're going to go, Yehuda will lead you. And they go and they lead. It's a somewhat unsatisfying answer. So, we have 2 minutes to sort this whole story out. The suggestion that I offered when we learned this through the first time around, which was back in a couple of years ago, at least, right? Suggestion I heard from Rabbi Dan, which I think makes a lot of sense. But you have to realize that sometimes the Navi puts parts of the story out of sequence. And it does so because textually, Tanakh will often finish one story before moving on to the next part of the story, even if there's pieces of information that are chronologically here, but not written here. There's no logic to the fact that in their tears for the decimation of Binyamin, they went and decimated Yavesh Gilad. That makes no sense. What makes much more sense is that when they were in the standoff with Binyamin. Remember that paragraph break I pointed out to you?
Mm-hmm.
Parakraf between Psukim Tadzayin and Yudzayin?
Mm-hmm.
There was a standoff. 400,000 soldiers gathered from all the tribes of Israel. How did they get so many? Now we know. How did they get so many? Because they made a shvua that says anybody doesn't come and fight is going to be
killed.
And then there's 26,000 plus 700 sharpshooting, warrior, qualified special forces from Binyamin. And there's a standoff. So what happens when there's that kind of military standoff? Before they go ask Urim V'Tumim. Right? What happens in that standoff?
Israel loses.
So what I suspect happened in that standoff is they started to negotiate. And the first line of negotiation is, either you give us the perpetrators of Givah, or we will take an oath that no man of Israel will ever be allowed to marry from Binyamin ever again. It's a strange oath to take altogether, right? Unless the oath is taken as a threat. And Binyamin says, poo-poo on you. What do I need you for? So they said, what do you mean, what do you need us for? Do you know who's standing here? So we have all the tribes of Israel united on this. You're out on the limb. You're alone. Look, every single one is here because we took an oath that nobody's missing. And I'll prove it to you. Tribe number one, here. Tribe number two, here. Tribe number three, here. Yavesh Gilad. Yavesh Gilad isn't there. So Binyamin says, well, you see, we have allies. And Bnei Yisrael says, no, you don't.
We're going to go kill them too.
Right. So they're thirsty for blood. They're in the heat of the battle. Their guns are blazing. But they're standing against 26,000 sharpshooters of Binyamin. I don't want to start up at them. But Yavesh Gilad is sitting out there, loyal to Binyamin, innocent, defenseless. So this part of the story I shared with you, but I don't have time to go through the textual proofs now, but that 12,000 soldiers sent out to kill all the men and all the women of marriageable age is a formula of battle that was used only once before. It was the formula of battle that Pinchas led against the tribe of Midian in the aftermath of the story of Baal Peor in Chumash. And Pinchas is the Kohen Gadol here, so I suspect it was Pinchas who led the 12,000. So this is a holy war. This is a holy war against Binyamin. And if you don't come and fight this war, then we'll kill you. And so they take 12,000 soldiers, a detour, complete detour. And they go out to Yavesh Gilad, 12,000. Why send 12,000? There's 400,000 sitting here. Because it's a complete detour. They got to go all the way over there to Yavesh Gilad. They send the 12,000 soldiers out to Yavesh Gilad and destroy the entire city. Man, woman, and child, the only ones left are 400 maidens. Now they come back to Binyamin. And you know what? Now Binyamin's angry. You know who fired the first shot in this battle? Mm-hmm. Binyamin. How do I know that? Because it says, "V'yas pasuk gedalet v'yasu b'nei Binyamin minarim agivata latzet lemilchama im b'nei Yisrael." Binyamin's furious. How dare you? Now you come to war against me for something, A, I didn't do, and B, because we want to protect the people of Givah against this evil of this get the story right first. And then you go and kill an entire innocent city called Yavesh Gilad. When they go into battle the first time, and God says Yehuda goes first, and 40,000 and 26,000 or 22,000 die, and then the second day they go into battle, and another 18,000 die, and 40,000 Israelites pay with their lives before the battle with Binyamin even really begins. So I suspect it's as a retribution for what they did to Yavesh Gilad, because that was unconscionable.
at least ostensibly against Binyamin, they have an argument. Binyamin are protecting the people of Gilad. The people of Gilad are not innocent in the story. They may not be Rishayim, but they're certainly not innocent. Nobody's innocent here. You know the only people who are innocent is? Yavesh Gilad. Nothing to do with anything. They probably never even got the memo. They're sitting out there minding their business, and you send a holy war of 12,000 soldiers from each tribe led by Pinchas to go and decimate man, woman, and child? Because they didn't come to call your call to a war, which was probably illegal in the first place. And then they come up with an ingenious solution. Now they have two oaths. At the end of the story, they have two oaths that led to two tragedies. One, that they can't marry Binyamin. And two, that led to the destruction of Yavesh Gilad. From Yavesh Gilad, they had female survivors. From Binyamin, they had male survivors. You marry them off in a ceremony, Shalom Yisrael, and you rehabilitate Shevet Binyamin, and everybody lives happily ever after. That's the story of Pilagish Begibah.
Now,
for generations, the symbol of Yavesh Gilad, the symbol of the tragedy of Pilagish Begibah, the depths of the tragedy, the depth of the evil that can be perpetrated when the tribes are unified for the wrong purpose and without a leader, is not the decimation of Shevet Binyamin, because they were not innocent, and is not the decimation of Giv'ah, because they were not innocent, nor is it the story of the cutting up of the Pilagish. The real symbol of the evil was Yavesh Gilad. Complete innocent victims. An entire city wiped out. Hundreds of years later, comes Shaul ben Kish Gibor Chayil of Shevet Binyamin, and he hears of an attack on Yavesh Gilad, and Yavesh Gilad is calling on the tribes of Israel to protect her. See the tables turned?
Yeah.
So what does he do? He takes a tzemed bakar, and he cuts it up, and he sends it to all the tribes of Israel. And he says, probably what he really meant to say was, you remember the story? Remember the story? It's time to turn the table. It's time, hundreds of years later, to right the wrong and the stain of Yavesh Gilad. And we are going to go as one, ki ish echad, chaverim, to protect Yavesh Gilad, which is on the other side of the Yarden, which means we are going to fight a national campaign for the protection of a city on the other side of the Yarden from external foe, to demonstrate that we really, really are one people, and that Yesh Melech B'Yisrael. So this story is the postscript to Sefer Shoftim. Mm-hmm. All right. I went a little further than I had intended, but this way we've come full circle.